Coming up in the Authorpreneur podcasts. Before we start, I do want to preface this topic of cliffhangers with stating the obvious. And I'm sort of saying this with someone who's new to writing fiction in mind. So each scene needs to have a satisfying arc. Something needs to be resolved at the end of the scene. Welcome to the Authorpreneur podcast. I'm your host, mystery author Amelia D. Hay. On this podcast, I will bring you writing, book marketing, and self-publishing advice so that you can create your dream author business, build your author platform, and be creatively independent. You can find the episode show notes and lots more information on the podcast page at authorpreneurpodcast.com/podcast. Hello, writers. So you've probably read the title of this episode and thought, what do cliffhangers have to do with outlining? I'm so glad you asked. Let me explain. If you're the kind of writer that needs to outline every scene, then you need to be aware of the types of cliffhangers and how to effectively use them to create a page-turning effect and not turn readers away. In fact, there's more than one type of cliffhanger. There's four. So in this episode, I'll unpack the four types of cliffhangers in fiction so that you can avoid the common pitfalls and end your scenes with cliffhangers in a way that keeps the reader turning the page. You'll probably have noticed, based on the title of this episode, that this is a part of a mini-series on writing great scenes. But I'm leaving this open-ended because I want to leave room for a topic that I might have overlooked so I can give the series as many episodes as it needs. Why, you ask? Because I want this episode to help you write better scenes. And in the spirit of helpfulness, I've included another writing exercise in this show as well. So previously in this series, I've shared episodes on What is a Scene? That's TAP041, The Anatomy of a Scene, which is episode TAP045, this one. And then there's a scene coming up called The Turning Points of the Scene. The Story Grid guys call this value shifts, but I'm including that in here as well because this is something I considered when I outlined, and I also look back retrospectively after I've written a scene into the dark and I check. And then usually if the scene's quite good, usually my scenes are quite good when I write into the dark. And I think it's because I'm writing intuitively. And I know that sounds a bit woo-woo, and I'm not usually that kind of person, but it does work for me. And usually when I look back, I can see like the turn in the scene. And I'm going to devote an episode into this. I'm going to try and make it as sort of simple and clear as I possibly can without sort of turning it into something that's overly complicated. So just in case you've missed it, the first episode in this series was actually answered the age-old question, what is a scene? And I'll link all of the episodes that I've done and the future ones in the show notes that you can see in your favorite podcasting app. And if I happen to run out of space in the show notes, because the apps, they do give you a limited amount of space, you'll find the links to the episodes in the blog post at the top half. So every one of my blog posts will have the image with the title underneath. The first thing you'll see will be the embedded player from Buzzsprout. Then there'll be an introduction, and then as a part of the introduction, there'll be another section that will say about the mini series, and that'll list the previous episodes. But there'll be links to the blog post because I can't link to everything because it just becomes messy and it looks like spam. But hopefully that helps you understand how I structure my website. Just to let you know, this episode was re-recorded on Wednesday, the 20th of March. I sort of looked back on the recording I did, I think it was the previous weekend, and I wasn't happy with it because I recorded everything all in one day and my voice kind of went. Like, it's still, like, it sounds like it's about to break again, and it's just, I guess that's my problem, not yours. And I want to sort of try and create the best possible content. So I thought I probably should just re-record this, today re-recording it, edit it, and then I'm not sure if I'm going to push it out today or if I'm going to wait and share it later. If you're interested in reading the transcript or would like links to anything that I've mentioned in the show, check out the very long blog post or edited transcript at authorpreneurpodcast.com/TAP046. And if you're new to this podcast, I want to say a huge thank you for stopping by and trying out my show. To those of you who've been faithfully listening, thank you for regularly listening in and supporting me. Your support means more to me than you know. If you're watching the YouTube video, you notice that I'm hopefully touching my in-ear headphones a lot less, and I've downgraded the size of the padding because I don't know, something's weird's happened. I know technically the inside of my ears kind of shrunk, but they've kept feeling like they were going to pop out any second. And this sound is a sound that could potentially pick up on my microphone, and I can't edit all of these crazy sounds out. Some of them can be really impossible to do that. Slowly over the last few months, actually, I think it's been a year, I've been working on creating a 3-act structure ebook based upon season one of the podcast. It's taken quite a while because I'm rewriting the episodes so they flow and sound more like a nonfiction novel than a collection of blog posts. And I'm giving my own fiction precedence over this because this isn't something that I'm going to sell. It's just going to be something that's exclusive for the podcast listeners who subscribe to my email list. And I know that sounds terrible, but I sort of have to balance. I have to give other things a more of a priority. And as I've been going through this book, I've come to realize that I didn't do an episode on romance structure because while it follows the 3-act format, there are important things that you need to know when writing in this genre. So I guess my question for you is, do you want me to create an episode on romance structure for the podcast? Let me know by commenting under the YouTube video or under the blog post. Or if you're listening on Spotify, you can submit your answer by filling out the Q&A that's at the end of the episode. I've only just realized recently this is something that is possible on Spotify. I kind of wish I could do it on all the other podcasting platforms, but fingers crossed they follow suit, right? Before we start, I do want to preface this topic of cliffhangers with stating the obvious. And I'm sort of saying this with someone who's new to writing fiction in mind. So each scene needs to have a satisfying arc. Something needs to be resolved at the end of the scene. And this doesn't have to be a major thing. Like, I know people say that each scene needs to have its own encapsulated story, but it needs to have a beginning, middle, and an end. And this end serves as a transition to the next scene, because you want your scenes to go together and feel connected in the story. So you don't have to, like when you write mysteries, I don't sort of show a clue or a red herring and then immediately resolve this. I make sure that the flow from scene to scene and what the main character does is extremely logical. I leave open ends, but I try and have the scene to have a complete arc. And this hasn't been something I've always done, but it's something I've tried to do. In my earlier works, this is something I wasn't good at because the penny hadn't dropped for me at this time about a scene having an arc. And if you don't create and close a satisfying arc within a scene, then the cliffhanger just becomes a cheap trick and is just an annoying thing that the writer has done in the middle of a great moment. And it goes without saying, you need to avoid the latter. You know, you need to avoid having your cliffhanger feel like a cheap trick. Also, a good cliffhanger, if used correctly, shouldn't have a quick resolution. But in saying that, sometimes it does. Like if you have someone who's woken up at the start of the scene, they're sort of thinking about something, then the phone rings and they sort of stumble through the house and they suddenly realize they're not alone in their house, even though they technically live alone. That can be a cliffhanger in the scene, and it's not considered a cheap trick because the scene has its own story, and the mini story is he's woken up, he's got things on his mind, or she has on her mind, she's going towards the phone, and then she has the realization there's somebody in my house/apartment. And this is obviously building suspense because this person may not get murdered in the next scene. Obviously, that would have a resolution in the next scene, and that sort of adds a bit of suspense. And this is sort of what cliffhangers do. Like you can use suspense in your book, even if you don't write in the mystery thriller suspense category. It definitely works in other genres like science fiction. You could use it in romance, but I would use it sparingly, if that makes sense. But now that I've said that, let's get into the four types of cliffhangers. The first type of cliffhanger you could use in your story is the classic peril cut. Think main character dangling on the edge of a cliff, then you end the scene or chapter at that point. But don't resolve the fallout from the peril immediately. Switch to another character, time, or setting, then come back and circle back to that situation. Eventually, when you circle back to the situation with the intention of resolving things, make it worse before you make it better. Obviously, this peril style of cliffhanger is only going to work in certain genres. I can't think of how you would use this kind of cliffhanger in a romance, unless it's like a romantic suspense or romantic thriller, or perhaps you could use it in the meet cute and the love interest rescues the protagonist. But you don't have to dangle your character off a cliff. In a thriller, mystery, or suspense novel, your character might be checking out a location as a part of an investigation and they get locked in on a high floor in a building that catches fire. Sure, I've ripped that idea straight from Die Hard, but it's a great example and I've just watched it just recently. I've gotten to the ripe old age of being in my early 40s and I still hadn't watched Die Hard, but luckily my husband corrected that little cinema sin, but you get it. Any type of danger that you can think of will work here. If you've heard something in this episode that was helpful to you and you'd like to support the show, then buy me a coffee for as little as $2 at buymeacoffee.com/author-ADHay. A blackout is another type of cliffhanger that's more common in the mystery, thriller, and suspense genres. I can definitely see it working in sci-fi, especially if you do something like Star Trek and it's like space exploration or first contact kind of sci-fi. Can definitely work in historical fiction, but I'm sort of trying to force myself into look at more genres than just what I write in. And once again, I can't think of how you would use this in romance unless you're writing something very dark, but I could be wrong. I think this kind of cliffhanger could take your story out of its genre conventions, and I think that's really important, especially, well, in all genres it's important to consider your genre tropes and conventions when you're writing a story, because the readers may not like it. But I could be wrong. You might be able to make this work. And if you do, let me know. Share an example over in the blog post in the comments section. Essentially, the character is hit to the back of the head unexpectedly from behind and the scene comes to a close at that point. The reader is left to turn the page to discover the fate of the main character. If you use this type of cliffhanger, it needs to be done sparingly and at the right time in the story. Using this tool too early in a story may not have the effect you desire. The reader needs to be invested in the main character's journey in order for this to work and create that page-turning effect. Like, you wouldn't use it in the opening scene of a first in series novel. It's just not going to work unless it's a character other than the main character. Actually, I've just realized I was wrong about the romance or women's fiction genre. Back when I was in my late 20s, I went on a Sophie Kinsella women's fiction kick. I kid you not. I was up until 3 a.m. reading this one of her books. It was that good. For some reason, I gave this book away when I moved from Brisbane to Melbourne, but in the last 2 years, I repurchased the book hoping to reread it, and it's called Remember Me. So this is what the cover looks like now. It's like this orange cover. This is actually a huge trend in the romance genre at the moment, where it's got like, where it's, I guess you could say, a minimalist cover, where it's just a plain color. You've got the protagonist and something sort of small on the, some other small thing, and then you've got the title, the author name, and like a hook that'll get the reader interested. And I think it's been around for a few years now. Oh yeah, here it is. I'll share an example because it sets up the entire stage for the book and it's in the Amazon look inside. At the end of the prologue, the main character Lexi rushes out of a taxi and falls over and knocks herself out. Chapter one starts off with her waking up, but her eyes aren't open yet. You get a sense of her thoughts. She's having flashbacks and she's trying to remember the previous night. Eventually, she realizes that the sheets on the bed don't feel like hers, and she opens her eyes to discover that she's in a hospital, and things unravel from there. If you read this yourself, you'll notice that the cliffhanger is not resolved in the first line of the next chapter. It takes several pages for the character to open her eyes and discover the location. And I think this is the key with a great cliffhanger, is it doesn't resolve itself quickly. I mean, you could, but for the sake of the story and the reader experience, you probably shouldn't. And yeah, it definitely does. Like, you have to... There was definitely a few pages before she actually realizes where she is. And I'm tempted to say it's a few thousand words before she has this realization. Yeah, I think it's fair to say it's definitely a few thousand words after the prologue. So the third type of cliffhanger I want to talk about is the reveal. A reveal is exactly what you think it is. In a plot reveal cliffhanger, the reader learns something that has a huge impact on the story and essentially changes everything. If the main character is yet to discover it and is about to stumble upon this course-altering reveal, this would be an ideal time to end a scene and then start the next chapter off where the character left off. Or if the reader and the protagonist are discovering this plot reveal together, then you could choose to end the scene at that point and then start the next scene or chapter off with the main character's reaction to these events. Obviously, this plot reveal cliffhanger is better used later on in the story after the reader has made a connection to your protagonist and is invested in the story. If it's used too early, it may not have a huge impact and might possibly feel like a gimmick. But the plot reveal isn't the only type of cliffhanger reveal that you can use in your novel to create a page-turning effect. Here's an example from Pride and Prejudice by Jane Austen. In chapter 34 of Pride and Prejudice, Mr. Darcy asks Elizabeth to marry him and then explains how his affection outgrew his concerns about Elizabeth and her family's inferiority. Elizabeth is naturally angry and refuses his offer of marriage, then proceeds to tear him a new one, citing all of his supposed indiscretions, obviously from her point of view, because she doesn't know what she doesn't know. Another type of reveal cliffhanger that you could do was a character-based reveal. So a character reveal is just as effective as a plot reveal. So what is a character reveal? It's that moment in a novel when you reach the end of a scene and the story divulges something significant about a character. And it doesn't have to be about the protagonist, but it does have to be a major player in the story or affect the story in a major way. In a murder mystery, the reader and the character learn something significant about a suspect that changes the story. Similarly, in a romance novel, the reader and the character learn something important about the romantic interest, and the reader is forced to turn the page to discover what happens next. Another example from Pride and Prejudice by Jane Austen. In chapter 35 of Pride and Prejudice, Elizabeth takes a walk, then returns to find Mr. Darcy waiting for her. He hands her a letter, and in that letter, he explains his conduct towards Jane and Mr. Wickham. These are the two things that she really holds against him. And the reader finally gets to see the world through Darcy's eyes and sees his true intentions. Yeah, I'm trying to use examples from well-known pieces of literature that we all probably have heard or been forced to study at school. Another type of reveal cliffhanger is a reveal to the reader. So I've sort of alluded to a reveal to the reader cliffhanger throughout this portion of the show, so it would be remiss of me not to discuss it. In this type of cliffhanger, the reader discovers something integral while the characters are in the dark, creating this sense of dramatic irony. And what makes the reader turn the page is the need to know when the characters discover this new information before it's too late. So yes, that's a little dramatic, but I can't help it. I write murder mysteries. In a romance, the reader might learn something about one of the romantic interests and is left to turn the page to find out whether the protagonist will choose the right partner. In a fantasy, the reader might learn that one of the party of characters is a double agent and is in lead with that big bad character, or is being tempted by them. And once again, the reader is left to turn the page and longs to figure out whether the character's darkness will be discovered by the other party members before it's too late. For the sake of not spoiling a book that you might be reading, I feel like I've already done this a few times already. I'm not going to share any examples from fiction because I can't figure out how to show you an example of this without ruining someone's reading experience. And I'm the kind of person, I'm not too bothered by spoilers, but I know everyone doesn't, you know, see the world the same way I do. But I also hate surprises in real life. For instance, I knew my husband was going to propose to me before he did. It's just how I roll. So the fourth and final cliffhanger is the emotional cliffhanger. And this kind of cliffhanger requires a bit of setup. In order for an emotional cliffhanger to work well, you need to ground the reader solidly in the head of the viewpoint character. If you fail to achieve this, the emotion will come across as over the top or contrived. Naturally, emotion can come from the main character, another character, or even the reader. It goes without saying that the character needs to be the point of view character that you filter the scene through. Otherwise, you're creating like unnecessary distance between the character that's experiencing the emotion and the reader. Before you reach the emotional moment, you need to set up something unexpected to occur at the start of the scene or chapter. At the end of the scene, the point of view character has an emotional response to this event. It goes without saying that the reader needs to feel connected to the character before you use this emotional cliffhanger. And I will say, if you use this too often, it will feel like a cheap trick. I can just tell that if you keep using this over and over again, especially in the same book, it's going to feel like you're constantly sort of putting a line out, reeling it in, putting a line out and reeling it in. It's the only way I can sort of describe it. What creates this page-turning effect is the reader's connection with the character and the reader's need to discover what the character is going to do after this emotional moment. An example from Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince by J.K. Rowling. In chapter 27 of this book, Harry puts on his invisibility cloak. Then he and Dumbledore rush to the astronomy tower on brooms. Dumbledore asks Harry to fetch Snape to cure him. But before Harry gets a chance to leave, footsteps are heard climbing the stairs. Before the door opens, Dumbledore immobilizes Harry, who is still under the invisibility cloak, with a spell, leaving Harry physically frozen under the cloak and forced to watch the conversation between Draco and Dumbledore, which ultimately leads to the death of Dumbledore at Snape's hand. Without the relationship between Harry and Dumbledore, which is built up throughout the book and the previous novels in the series, the scene wouldn't have the emotional impact that it has as you read it, because it would just be a principal dying of a school and not another potential sort of father figure for Harry being just sort of ripped out from underneath him, because that's how it feels. And because you've had all of this stuff built up before you see this scene in this book, like even the other books in the series sort of build up to this, it's without all those things, this scene would fall flat. Or whether or not you sort of like or agree with J.K. Rowling is a different story, but this is an example of it done really well in literature. And now it's time for the writing exercise. Pull out your top five favorite books and find the cliffhanger moments in these stories. So why five? It's important that for this exercise that you have a few examples of cliffhangers and dissect how they made you feel as a reader and what drove you to keep reading. As you come across these moments in these five books, ask yourself the following questions. What type of cliffhanger was in the scene or chapter? How did this make you feel as a reader? What made you keep turning the page? Write these thoughts down in a journal and ask yourself, do you see a pattern? And if so, what is that pattern? Next, brainstorm ways that you can create a similar effect in your current or next book. In a nutshell, the key to creating a cliffhanger that keeps the reader turning the page and not closing the book forever is you need to give the reader a valid reason to turn the page. That's how you avoid the cheap gimmickry that is often associated with cliffhangers. I hope this episode gives you a basic understanding of the four types of cliffhangers in fiction and how to write them. As always, I have a few important questions for you. Did you do the writing exercise? Would you like me to continue setting writing exercises like this? Share your thoughts in the comments section under the blog post or under the video. There's a link to the blog post in the show notes in your favorite podcasting app. The next episode of the podcast, I will delve deeper into the turning points of a scene and how they can help you write better scenes that move the story forward. Thank you for listening and happy reading and writing, everybody. Thank you for listening to the Authorpreneur podcast. If you love this episode, then hit the subscribe button and leave a review on your favorite podcasting app. I'm your host, Amelia D. Hay, and I'll see you in the next episode. Bye.